You're listening to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB, practical know-how to help your farm business.
Hello, welcome to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB. I'm John Bates. Thank you for listening. Mental health has emerged as one of the most significant issues facing the farming industry, and the Royal Agricultural Benevolent Institution, or RABI as it's known, have conducted a survey involving thousands of people, and in this podcast we discuss the findings of that survey and the steps the RABI are taking to reach those needing support. Just by way of background, DEFRA estimates that 472,000 people work in commercial agriculture across the UK, including farmers, farm workers and their households. It won't come as any surprise to know that farming people often work for modest financial rewards, and their health and well-being are inextricably linked to the business of farming. According to the RABI, a DEFRA report estimates that over a fifth of farming businesses lost money in the financial year 2019-2020. And sadly, statistics show that more than one farmer a week takes their own life, and less visible are high rates of mental ill health and poor quality of life. The Royal Agricultural Benevolent Institution, RABI, Chief Executive Alicia Chivers joins us now to discuss the issue and tell us about some of the support available and the great work going on. Alicia, welcome to the podcast and thank you for sparing the time. Tell us a little bit about the RABI.
Thank you, John, and thank you to AHDB for having me on the podcast to talk about this really important subject matter. The RABI, and it's a lot easier than saying the whole name, which is why we do tend to say RABI, because I get it wrong 9 times out of 10. We are a national charity that supports farming people across England and Wales through our network of local managers, and we also have volunteers across the country who support into the organisation.
Now, we have lots of farmers who listen to this podcast and they're involved in all of the various sectors. So are there some sectors of farming where people feel more pressure and anxiety?
Certainly our survey indicates that there are, and I think that they're probably not terribly surprising. They are specialist pigs, was particularly badly affected around both their physical and mental well-being, grazing livestock, dairy, LFA areas, and that sort of mixed farming belt. So they were particularly badly impacted from what our survey results were telling us. But actually, the level of mental and physical well-being across the farming sector is poor when we compare to the general population as a whole.
I would imagine that the changes that farming faces and the planning that's going on for the changes in policy that are on the cards, the phasing out of basic payment scheme, the post-Brexit labour availability conundrum, as well as rocketing input costs, I should imagine that will all have a negative impact on people's well-being. Are more people turning to you now and your organisation for help?
Well, we're absolutely finding that, John, and whether there's also the sort of bounce back from COVID coming into play. But if we look at the first quarter for 2022, we had an increase actually of over 2/3 compared to the previous year. So we've had over a 60% increase in the number of people coming forward to the charity for support, which is fantastic because it means people are hopefully starting to feel that it's quite a normal part of life to be able to approach us, but also, of course, a little bit worrying that, you know, the level of need that's out there.
So let's just talk a little bit about the survey. This was a huge piece of research. Has it helped you understand the challenges? And if so, how has it helped you?
It absolutely has, John. And the survey, we had over 15, it was nearly 15,500 responses from that community you talked about. So it was farmers, farm workers, the families, it was that entire sort of adult generation. And it, what it has given us is evidence. So I think a lot of what the survey tells us, we probably anecdotally knew or we suspected was the case, but we have never had statistical evidence that gives us a base to work from before. And that's across the board around mental, physical and financial health.
What were the big takeouts for you?
Well, I personally, I think the biggest thing that we as an organisation take out of this survey is the statistical link between financial, mental and physical health. So a lot of people are sort of asked us, well, which one drives the other? And actually, I'm sure that's a very interesting piece for lots of people. But actually, for us as a charity, it doesn't matter which one is the driving factor. As you touched on earlier, we are in a position where, you know, farming people tend not to make huge profits as a whole. And we have subsidy reduction. We have all the current cost of living and input cost issues. And there are indicators from, we work quite closely with other organisations like Joseph Rowntree, that the level of poverty, so people living with relatively low income, which is what we call it now, in my day we used to call it poverty, is likely to increase in our population by up to 50% by the time England gets through transition in 2027. So knowing that financial health is likely to suffer for, you know, a large element of our community, then we now know that will adversely impact on their physical and mental health.
So you say because of this research, you've got evidence. Were you surprised by the findings?
I think I was surprised by the level of findings that we had, as in the level of poor health. I think we all, as I said, knew anecdotally, and certainly as a charity, we deal with this. My regional support managers day in, day out are seeing the reality of life for far too many people on farm being not a terribly comfortable place to be. But I think the level, and again, if we look at physical health as well as the mental health, that, you know, over 50% of the population are suffering pain and discomfort that impacts their daily activities every day. And this is across the board. This isn't then, these are, you know, 35-year-olds. We're not talking just at, you've had a, you know, an entire lifetime working in what is a very manual job. These are young people who are suffering very poor levels of physical health. So I think it was the level that was identified rather than the issues per se that really, I think, surprised us. And I think the one piece that we probably hadn't really foreseen until we started to go through the results, but actually makes a lot of sense, was the level of poor mental well-being within farming women, and particularly those in those child caring and child rearing ages. So the 25 to 45 year old age group of farming women had the worst levels of mental well-being across the board from our survey. And I think that was something we can probably understand why that's likely to happen. But that, I think, was a bit of a shock to me, that they were a group. We tend to think about mental health, and certainly around farming, it's quite a male-dominated sector within that sort of male. And again, suicide, you know, we tend to focus around men taking their lives. It's more prevalent. But actually, it started us thinking about what lies behind, you know, the women in farming, that age group, having such poor levels of mental well-being, and what can we possibly do as a society to break some of those cycles and remove some of those stresses and anxieties and help them to improve their mental health.
I apologise now if I'm clumsy with any of my language, but previously we have had guests on the podcast when we've looked at this issue, and you know, we've had some terribly sad tales regaled. And in one particular instance, we had a guest on the podcast who was talking about sadly losing her husband. And she was saying that while she'd identified that there had been some changes in her husband, who was a relatively young man and a father, if I recall correctly, of a couple of children with his wife. And she'd identified some sort of physical changes in him in terms of his appearance and perhaps being sort of slightly withdrawn. She hadn't identified the sort of the very serious addition that he was facing, the anxiety, which ultimately led to, sadly, him taking his own life. And I would imagine for people listening to the podcast, they would be interested to hear if you've got any sort of views, or with your experience, what should people be looking out for? Are there signs that are just subtle, but nevertheless are telltale signs that should make us ask the all-important question?
I think, and I'm not a mental health expert myself, we do work very closely with other organisations like Samaritans and Mind, who are obviously those specialists. And it sounds a little bit trite, but there are no easy answers to this one, John, because every individual is different and there aren't always obvious signs. And actually, it can be almost the opposite, that people are very good at hiding. We become very, very good at putting on a front. And I think this is a real issue for our community, because we self-label, you know, before we even look at how we treat each other as a community. We are brought up, I'm a farmer's daughter, you know, I was brought up, we are resilient, we are tough, we almost have to be superhuman before we start, and that becomes the norm. We're also very practical as a community. So again, without trying to, you know, bemoan my own family, I was, you know, very much when I was growing up, you know, if I was moping around as a, you know, as a youngster, then my father or mother would say, well, is there something you can do about it? And can we do something? If not, well, get on and do something else. And actually, we don't always, we're not the best at addressing ourselves, of acknowledging that we need to look after our own mental well-being. And I think, you know, one of the biggest challenges that we have as a sector is making it acceptable and easy to consider our own mental well-being. I think the term mental health scares people rigid, because we immediately tend to default to that crisis level of mental health, people who are in crisis, maybe thinking about taking their life by suicide. But actually, we all have mental health, and it can be great, it can be indifferent, or it can be really poor, and we can veer around those quite quickly in reality. So I think the key that all of us can do something about is trying to actually think about protecting our own mental well-being. And there are some really simple tips and steps that are actually quite practical that we can all make, that make a difference to that well-being. So I think it's not all sitting on a couch talking to a therapist. That can help, and undoubtedly does help hundreds of thousands of people every year. But it's trying to break this down to just say, we need to protect ourselves, and we need to think about our mental well-being in a way that is less threatening and much more normal. And we do that, and the key thing about anything is talking. If you are worried about somebody, talk to them about it, because the worst thing you can do is not say anything. And talking very, very rarely makes it worse. It will help. Even if we can't change the situation, by having a conversation, the pure fact that you are offloading will lift your mood. Now, I'm not saying it's going to change the world, but it will lift your mood. That is a psychological fact. So I think the second thing we have to deal with then is trying to help people to feel comfortable to have the conversation, because we are all terribly scared. What if I mention suicide or I talk about mental health, that I'm somehow going to trigger that, or I'm going to make the situation worse? And it's really important, a part of what we're doing as an organisation is trying to put some really bespoke, farmer sort of friendly training down that helps people. Just, it's not to make you a mental health expert, that takes many, many years of training, but it's trying to help people feel comfortable to have those conversations. And what's really important for us was that all of our training comes with aftercare. So if you are worried, you've had a conversation, or you think you should have a conversation, or you're not sure how to have a conversation, we have trained professional counsellors available to talk to you so that you can offload as well. So you are not carrying that load of, did I say the right thing? Did I make it worse? And actually, having spoken to them, and they are the experts, 99% of the time you will have done the right thing, but actually just getting that reassurance means that you're not carrying that weight as well.
So my understanding correctly then, that the RABI is, you know, looking to work with people who are suffering mental illness themselves, that there's something that, you know, not quite right with, you know, their personal situation. But you're also saying, you know, there's the wider group of people, there's the support network, there's family and so on, who can also be talking to the charity.
Absolutely, John. And I think it's really important. I'm very grateful, actually, you sort of raised this, of we want to ideally talk to people preventatively. it is much better for us, for society, and for the person if we can support people to maintain good mental well-being. So it is, yes, it's about that crisis support. That's always going to be a part of what we provide to our community. But actually, I will go on record here, I have received counselling, and I know then some of the tips that help me to maintain my mental well-being in the better range of the scale. I'm not saying I don't have off days, but I can recognise myself when it becomes more than just a few off days and it's starting to really impact on my life. And I have some tips that then I use that work for me. And again, they will be different for everybody. But it's about trying to get people into the routine of thinking about their mental well-being and not being scared. Say, actually, things don't feel quite right. And maybe it's a good idea to talk to somebody. And that doesn't have to be our EBI. You know, initially, it might be somebody you know and trust in your community. But not to be afraid of that. But absolutely then, for the community around us, to not be afraid to start those conversations as well.
Alicia, you spoke very briefly about your regional colleagues and the team out there on the ground. So just paint a bit of a picture for us of how they're organised and how they deliver the services that the charity operates.
Absolutely. So we have a network of what are called regional support managers, and we have them in every region of England and Wales. So we have benefit specialism. They are fantastic at helping people to plan and to think about what outcomes they would most like to achieve to move forward in a positive way. So they have lots of training. I cannot under-egg how fantastic this team is. And I'm very lucky that I get the opportunity to go out with them and visit. And it's been a little bit curtailed with COVID. But I am constantly amazed by the patience and specialism they bring, talking about very difficult subjects, you know, be it financial. You know, it's difficult for people to talk about their financial situation, health, well-being. These are all incredibly complex subjects. And they navigate these with such care and understanding, and ensuring that those individuals at the core of the service are comfortable and supported throughout that process. And we have relationships with some of our beneficiaries that have been ongoing for over 30 years. And sometimes they may see somebody once and it's, you know, that will do the job. And we will do, and they will be out there supporting that person and the wider family for as long as they need that support. And that's across a whole raft of services. And if we directly can't support somebody, then we will find somebody who can from our extensive networks. And we have a huge charity arena. We're very blessed in agriculture to have lots of fantastic organizations working locally. We've got fantastic farmer networks that we work with, right through to the public services, you know, and that public support. They have this incredible network locally of being able to get the right people, but be there. So we're not, you know, we're looking to wrap that service and support around the individuals.
Alicia, you talk about the sort of the financial situation that some farmers face and the difficulties that that may well present. And in life, you don't get nout for nout, as they say. So how does the RABI get its funding?
Well, we're very lucky that, I mean, we are just over 160 years old as a charity, and we have been very lucky that people have entrusted us with their money over generations, and particularly within legacy. So we do receive quite a lot of our funding, and historically have received funding through legacies. And where we haven't utilised those in year, then we use that to generate an income. So we are able to generate a certain amount of income ourselves. However, we do, of course, need to raise money every year. And we do that in a variety of ways. We have a fantastic network of volunteers on the ground who hold a myriad of events. They attend shows. They do everything and anything legal that they can think of to fundraise. We have a fantastic supporter base of trusts and corporate supporters who also undertake events or donate or work with us as well. And on occasion, when I'm able to, then I will try and squeeze some money out of government where and when I can as well.
Excellent. All power to your elbow. And for those who may be listening to this, who are, you know, who may think they'd like to have a chat, but are a bit anxious about making the call and contacting you, what's the best way to get in touch with you guys?
Well, probably the easiest way, we have a 24/7 free phone helpline. So that is literally manned 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And we have a team of very specialist individuals who man that. They understand farming, they understand who farming people are, and they can then work with an individual to get then one of our regional support managers out to them. We have a website where people can find lots of details about us. That's www.rabi.org.uk. We have then a help@rabi email address. Or alternatively, like I said, we have a network on the ground. So we have regional managers, regional support managers. It's just reaching out to somebody. Reach out to a friend and, you know, try and get that support to come forward. Or alternatively, you know, through any of the other farming organisations, you know, we all talk to each other. We're all there to support the person. So a complete myriad of ways to contact us.
We will put the helpline number in the show notes and all the other ways that people can contact RABI. So, Alicia, thank you very much indeed for your time and thank you for sharing your story. This podcast was produced by Gemma Pammant. Stay safe, stay well. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have any ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk. We want to hear from you.